The following is a Stick Boy We Talk production.
The following contest scheduled for one fall.
I am the man.
If you're the man, what the rock is talking. Woo! The best there is.
What it is, what it do, welcome to the One Fall Podcast 2020 year in review. We have the ultimate babyface, Mr. Joel Johnson.
How goes it?
And we have the captain of the Prince Captain of Charisma, Moten. And this is 2020, a year that has been all over the place for the wrestling industry, where you had shouts of crowds at the start of the year, and then WrestleMania was put into a bleak silence in a year where the WWE was led by a tribal chief and a boss, but everything else almost was a moot point, maybe outside of a Scottishman, where AEW took the industry and rose it to a new level and had a celebration of the indies start to come together and kind of start a retribution, a revolution against the rest of the wrestling industry together with them. And Japan, well, they came out strong. They got hit hard by COVID, and they've been kind of been going up and down. This was 2020 in the world of professional wrestling.
Yes, it's the Stick Boy Podcast, and you know what that means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it does also was a year with a lot of, you know, big, you know, names lost, obviously recently losing Brody Lee, which is a tough loss. We lost the architect of the Royal Rumble and a lot of the wrestling industry and the first asterisk Intercontinental Champion in Pat Patterson. Losing Shad Gaspar in a tragic accident where him just being an absolute hero. And, we're losing a really, you know, there's always great fathers lost, but two great fathers, obviously, with everything you've heard about Brody and obviously what Shad did and many others lost this year, Danny Hodge recently. So respect to those at the beginning of the pod that we had unfortunately lost in the wrestling industry as that list continues to grow at an unfortunate rate.
No, that's well said. I have nothing really to add. It's tough to celebrate a lot of this year, but you know what? We should celebrate the people. They went out there and they put their bodies on the line for our entertainment, and respectfully, let's give them their due.
When we thought for a bit, we did a pod back in late March, and we didn't think we'd be doing a pod like this because we didn't think there would be a wrestling industry for a good end of month. We thought, much like the rest of the sports world, that they'd be taking a break as well.
I've got some breaking news for the podcast.
Okay.
Tony Khan said on the post show that the TNT title has been retired. When they said Brody Jr. was the champion for life at the end of the show tonight, it wasn't a replica belt. It was the real one. Don't know what it means for the future.
Okay, so interesting. I'm sure Darby Allin's perfectly fine with that, and I'm sure they'll replace it and he'll still get his run, but I think that's the right thing to do. That's another classy move by them. After a classy night, classy show they put on.
I'm floored. We'll see how this plays out in the next little bit, but
Well, let's go and talk about the year in 2020. Like I said, it was a year where we didn't think there would be a professional wrestling. We thought that they would be kind of going out with the rest of professional sports. There was no bubble. There was a rising grow in fans here and there. But at the end of the day, there was a professional wrestling landscape. And we started with our male wrestler of the year. Last year, me and Morton, we both went with Adam Cole Bebe. Joel, you went with Will Ospreay. Since you were the difference maker, Joel, I'll let you start off this year.
So this year is definitely a different year. There's a lot of things that went into my choice. Every category I was wish-washy on, there's no clear-cut winner except two. Two spots were a clear-cut winner for me. This was not one of them, but I decided to go with the former Lunatic Fringe, Jon Moxley. I just thought his program with Jericho was good. His program with Brody Lee was good. I thought his program with MJF was really good. And I thought the build to towards Kenny was good. I thought he carried himself with a lot of pride and a lot of dignity as the world champion for AEW. And it just felt like his matches were good. Felt like his promos were good. I thought that Moxley overall helped show what AEW is and helped really kind of guide the ship through a very turbulent year for AEW. This is their first full year of existence with running shows, and it's during a pandemic. And I thought having Moxley at the helm was the right call, and I think that's why he's Wrestler of the Year.
I'm going to echo the same with you. I also picked Mox just because I think he had the most important feuds of the year. Every single feud that he was in felt like the most important. He made the championship feel the most important. I felt like he was the most important world champion this year. I thought Drew McIntyre's done an okay job with the, and I think, you know, later on Roman's done a very good job with the Universal title and making that title feel a little bit important. But throughout the year, Mox made that title feel like it was the most important title in professional wrestling. And in every single match that he had, even having the feud that he did with Eddie Kingston raised to another level. So that's why I got Mox as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a clean sweep here then, this one. I mean, I don't see how there can be anybody but him. You know, he, as you mentioned, everything he did was good to great, you know. He had a bunch of really good to great matches, and he had great to great promos, really. I mean, his promos were fantastic. And, yeah, he carried it. He legitimized it. He proved himself as an all-around performer. And when you think about where we came in last year, where we're going 2 years ago, he was my pick for worst wrestler. You know, 1 year ago, he was my pick for most improved. And then where he was this year, he was the best in the business. For if you look at it, he benefited from having a long title reign, and there's a lot of benefits to giving good long title reigns. And yeah, absolutely, he hit it out of the park. He carried the company the way a champion is supposed to.
Definitely. Next, we go to female wrestler of the year. Last year, I went with Tessa Blanchard. Joel, you went with Tessa Blanchard. Morton, you went with Becky Lynch. Not a lot of Tessa Blanchard this year for different reasons. We'll leave that. I'm going to start off with this one. I'm going to go with Sasha Banks. I think the way, number one, the ratings show what Sasha did. Everything that she did with Bayley, the matches she had this year, some phenomenal matches. I think the matches she had, you know, even though I wasn't a huge fan of how the angle went, but her and Bayley and Hell in Cell was great. She had some fantastic matches with Asuka. They actually made the women's tape belts kind of seem important for a little bit again when her and Bayley had the titles there, and then they got ruined all over again. But whenever Sasha was on the TV, everything really mattered this year. She stepped it up in all the matches that she had, and they needed someone to carry the torch in the women's division when Becky left, and Sasha took that and ran with it. Who won? Let's go Morton on that, the next pick here.
I'll go. I hate to do this, guys. I'm going to go with a tie, because to me, I can't separate Sasha and Bayley. I have to give them a tie. I think that, you know, both of them elevated each other and kept that entire, they carried that division in the same way that we talk about Moxley carrying the division and carrying the company on the back. I think you could argue those two carried the company on the back together, the two of them.
The highest rated segments throughout the year, until Roman came back, those were the highest rated segments continuously were Sasha and Bayley segments. You know, when they talked about the demo god stuff, and even Jericho one point's like, the only people that are beating me in ratings right now are Sasha and Bayley.
And really, when you look at Sasha and Bayley, I mean, it could have not worked, you know, and they screw up everything you say. You feel like these two, that it didn't get screwed up because of them and their talent.
Yeah.
Not because of the company. And I think that's a testament to them. So, you know, on Bayley in particular, I mean, you know, she had a long way to come as a heel and to prove that she could, you know, she could be that character, and she succeeded it, you know, perfectly. And Sasha complimented her perfectly, and it just worked so well.
Joel?
I actually went with Bayley. So this is kind of funny. We're all in the similar spectrum. I thought the fact that Bayley was champion helped me, and the fact that Bayley had been able to take her character and morph it, and the run she had as the women's champion, how long it was, I thought was a really good testament. And you guys hit the nail on the head with everything you said about both her and Sasha. It is really a coin toss between either or for me. I didn't know we could pick a tie, so I went with just the one.
We can't, but I decided to.
I like it.
I think in this case, I think Morton's right, because I think both of them absolutely carried that division and WWE until Roman came back.
Yeah. An asterisk, it's not asterisk, but a short outside Asuka had a phenomenal year in her own right as well. I thought she really picked up her game, but I just thought the way that both Sasha and Bayley individually carried this company, they were the, like, for me, I definitely went into major casual wrestling fan this year, catching it here and there. And they were one of the few things this year that if I did watch WWE television, it was because of what both women were doing, because whatever they did was really, there was a chance for a bit there with Sonya and Mandy there, where I thought that program was really getting going. And then obviously there's a lot of reasons why that didn't end up going where it went, but that's the only other time I thought that the women's division outside of Asuka and Sasha and Bayley really had my interest peaked. But these two specifically, just even with Mania, you thought, oh, they'd mess it up with Mania. They made it work at Mania and brought it all the way to having a hell of a match at Hell in a Cell.
Yeah. The only complaint, and again, this isn't their fault, is that they, after all that buildup, they went through the feud in like a month.
That's the problem. It should have been Mania. They shouldn't have pulled the trigger when they did. Yeah.
Yeah. And it should have lasted a little bit longer.
Yeah.
You know, but not too long, much longer. That's one thing they do generally too long, is too long are their feuds. So,
and I think they may come back to it, because the one thing I think they're doing a kind of a good job on SmackDown is they're doing the storyline of how Bayley is struggling without Sasha, which is an interesting storyline to go with. And I like that storyline. So maybe that succeeds to switching the dynamic to turning Bayley back to a babyface.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, you got to follow a Hell in a Cell match with probably a regular wrestling match. That's maybe they'll do an Iron Man match again.
That'd be fine. Next up, we have the tag team of the year. Last year was a clean sweep with the Lucha Bros, who unfortunately just didn't do a lot this year. You know, obviously a variety of reasons during the COVID time of this. I'm pretty sure this is going to be a clean sweep. I'm going with the Young Bucks. I just thought, just consistently, I think they had maybe the best match of the year, and just, you know, and then the turn to kind of being heels and everything they were able to do with that worked so well. And I just think they continually proved why they're the best wrestler, or the best wrestling tag team in the game.
I'll go next and agree with you. You know, let's put it this way. They had they had this unbelievable, I think maybe the best tag team match I've ever seen, and probably another one of the top five tag team matches I've ever seen in the same year. And that's the common denominator, is the Young Bucks, right? We saw FTR take on Hangman Page and Omega, and they had a match that was pretty good. And then Bucks worked with each of them and had, you know, two of the five best tag team matches of all time. So what does that say? That says it's the Bucks. That's the unifying factor.
Yeah.
You know, that's the straw that stirs the drink here is the Bucks. They're an incredible team. They used to be a team that was all moves and action, and they've mixed in psychology as they've gotten better. And it's like so many of the young teams are still all moves in action. And if they can mix in the psychology like the Bucks and figure that out, we're going to have some incredible tag team wrestling over the next, you know, decade or two.
I think they're the best rating draws for AEW. I think consistently Young Buck matches pop over a million. And you see why. You saw tonight, you've seen every match that they've had. They constantly bring it. They're constantly going at 110%. They are giving it their all for this company. And they're someone you want to build your tag team division around, because they elevate any tag team division that they're in. That's why they were tag team of the decade for our decade of the year podcast last year. They have consistently elevated their game, and I'm really excited to see what 2021 brings, especially as the possibility of some forbidden doors potentially starting to creak open.
Absolutely. Next up, we have Best in the Mic. Last year, I did Chris Jericho, Morton, and Joel. You both went with Cody Rhodes. Joel, who's your pick this year?
So I'm going to go with he appeared during an open challenge against Cody and got a contract and somehow got a world title shot. And his passion, his intensity, the sadness, like everything about that character just emanated from the mic and Eddie Kingston. Even his promo tonight, they're very short and sweet, get a little heat on and then get the tar beat out of him. It's Eddie Kingston. Like this guy went from selling his wrestling gear and getting ready to hang him up to now being a staple of AEW and being one of the best on the mic. I was just thoroughly impressed with what he did in the time frame that he had. I really liked Moxley. I really liked Cody. But I just think Eddie Kingston deserves his dues, especially for what he was able to do in such a short time.
Morton?
I've also got the Mad King. He was my pick as well.
That's my Eddie pick King, too. So.
Yeah. He's in a world where, like, if you want to know the difference between the talking, even good talking that you see on WWE, and what good talking can be elsewhere when it's not scripted, watch a really good WWE promo and then watch Eddie Kingston and tell me you aren't moved a lot more by Kingston, because what he says feels so real, because it is. It's coming from a place of truth. And this guy talked himself out of from unemployment to a pay-per-view main event within just a few short months, and he delivered. And I mean, the guy hasn't got the best body. He's not the best worker. None of that matters. He is must-see TV because he is such a good talker.
I mean, sorry, Joel. I talked about my casual sense. So one promo from him, and it sucked me into watching the pay-per-view. With that, that's how good he is. Anyways, continue, Joel.
He, like you said, he doesn't have the best body, doesn't have the best in-ring, but damn it if he doesn't work hard. Damn it if he doesn't work hard. And he tries to back up every single thing he said. You believed his words. Like, you believed that program with Moxley. You believe any time he was talking, and he was you could see him kind of manipulating the Lucha Bros and his best friend and Rey Fenix, just little things.
For me, you know what it was for me? The moment where I went, okay, that's it, best on mic, is the moment where a cameraman was in the ring and he goes, you haven't trained to be in the ring. Get out of my ring. Get out. You haven't trained to be in here. Get the hell out or I'll beat the hell out of you. And you know what? I was like, he means it. Wow. This guy, there's something behind that. That's just the truth to him. Wrestling is important to him. He loves it. You can tell the passion is there. That mat is, it may not be a church, but to him it's hollow ground.
Yeah. And I think the one thing with
By the way, I stole that line from Bret Hart talking about MSG.
Eddie Kingston just has like that like you said, that passion. I feel like that's one of the things that has stirred the drink for AEW, is I feel a lot of passion emanating from that company, and they let Eddie Kingston be Eddie Kingston, which there's no way WWE would have let.
Can you imagine if he had accepted the, because after he showed up on TV he was offered an NXT contract? Can you imagine if he had took that? What a mistake that would have been.
He would have been fired with it.
He's such a good promo. He probably still would have delivered good promos, but man,
it wouldn't have been the same level. No, he wouldn't have been able to be him.
And I mean, the other thing is, if you watch BTE, he cut promo on Sour Patch Kids.
Yeah, and it's a killer promo every time. Like, they just give him a topic and say, cut a promo like that, and he can do it, and he kills it. He's incredible.
And I think that's
what I was going to say. That was a gimmick of his on this year in BTE, is like, cut a promo. It's like, okay.
Like, that's something that you can't teach, but he can definitely help guys out with their promos. He can definitely pitch ideas and throw things out and maybe try to help get some guys their promo games up a little bit. And when you start elevating everyone else around you, it's scary how good your company can become.
So we clean sweep on Eddie Kingston. Next up, we have announcer of the year. Last year, I picked Excalibur, and Morton and Joe, you both picked Kevin Kelly. Morton, where are you going this year?
You know what? Kevin Kelly is still the man in a lot of ways, but You know what? I mean, he's able to, without a, you know, an audience around, to really get over. He gets over the storylines better than anybody else, I think. But he's not my pick. You know, honorable mention to him. But I'm going with a guy. He's not there every week, but every time he's at the announce table, I am more entertained by him at the announce table than any other human being on the planet. And he proves it again tonight. And that's Chris Jericho. Chris Jericho is the best commentator in the business. He probably did 10 shows this year, but those 10 shows, incredible. He's just so quick.
He's very good at it. Joel?
I'm actually going to go, Kevin Kelly would be an honorable mention. If there was more live New Japan, I feel like he probably would have won again for me. But I'm actually going to go with Tony Schiavone. I actually really enjoy what he brings. I feel like he just, you feel his passion and his love for everything.
It's Sting!
Like, I know exactly what I was going to do.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he helps fill in little gaps. He works well with Excalibur, which I really like Excalibur as well. And I just feel like the two of them playing off each other works. And I feel like Tony Schiavone kind of balances out for having JR in the booth.
Yeah,
definitely. We'll get to JR in a bit. mine is Samoa Joe. Has been, once in a while in WWE we get that broadcaster that we get very excited for and then we get stale on him, and I'm sure that's gonna happen with Joe, but he just added a different dynamic. He adds kind of a big fight feel, you know, especially when the Ray and Seth stuff was going on. I thought he was very good in it. You believe when he says that, when he's kind of does his solo interviews, it kind of reminded me a little bit of being like when Lawler first kind of stepped in the scene. It's like, yeah, this guy is just meant to be a color commentator for all the right reasons. Anything he says, you know, the big fights that he's been in, you know, the level that Joe has been at. So whenever he says something, it really matters. He hits everything correctly. And sometimes he talks about things like as it's a big fight feel instead of a wrestling feel. And Joe has just been spot on with everything that he's been able to do this year and add a bright light to the WWE commentary table.
It sucks because he's so good that he's not wrestling anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I still want to see him wrestle.
Is it done? Like,
he's just too, the word is he's just too valuable in the booth.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's done. I'd be surprised if he doesn't have a match again, but that's the word. He's just too valuable in the booth. And
Vince, it sounds like Vince really likes him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though, you know, they'll ruin him because they ruin everybody.
Yeah. Next up, this one's a little harder for me, so we'll see where you guys go. Best non-wrestling performer. Last year I went with CM Punk. That one was just a heart moment. That did not last very well. Joel, you went with Aubrey Edwards. Morin, do you remember who you picked last year?
No. Who did I pick last
year?
No.
Yeah.
Can't be.
You picked Lana.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Well, last year, you know what? She was a non-wrestling personality, and she's much better at that.
Yeah. Who are you going with this year, Mon?
Who am I going with this year? This is a tough category. It's a tough category. There's some good guys in AEW, but it's tough to say which one is the standout guy. I probably would say that as far as the way he carries himself and the way he's gotten over his team, that Taz is the best guy. So I'll go with Taz as the best non-wrestling personality. But I could, you know, I mean, if you wanted to go with Tully Blanchard or one of the other, you know, there's plenty of them in AEW that are really solid. And Eddie Kingston, to some degree, you know, he wrestles, but he's more valuable in when he's almost as a manager.
Joel?
I actually went back to back and I picked Tony Schiavone just because of his interview, the way he plays off Britt Baker, when he does his interviews with Cody. Like, he adds certain elements to certain wrestlers that I think stand out, like his interview with Sting. He has multiple roles in AEW that I think shows the value of having Tony Schiavone. He does the post show where he'll interact with fans. He'll interact with the wrestlers and do interviews in the ring. He can be in the booth doing commentary. Like, it feels like he has so many hats, and I feel like he's good at all of them. And that's one of the things I look at for a non-wrestling performer is, what do you add outside of the wrestling? I feel like Tony helps add different things to the different wrestlers around him, and he'll have different relationships. You hear him bantering with Eddie Kingston. You hear him bantering with Jericho. There's a lot of different, even someone like Taz. I think that's another great pick as well. So I went with Tony Schiavone based on all the other things that he does within within AEW.
I'm gonna agree with Morton and go with Taz as well. I just think what he's able to do with Brian Cage there, who's an okay talker, but I think it's helped to have him with Taz and adding the FTW title, especially for what that means to me, a Mo growing up with it, added a different dynamic to it, and getting Will Hobbs in the team and what he's been able to do, putting a guy like Ricky Starks under him, who is not just ready yet, and so Taz can be there to talk, is one of the better talkers of all time. It was a great dynamic to have Taz there. Shivani's a great pick as well, Joel, but Taz definitely has, you know, as Team Taz kind of builds up, they put all the right pieces around him that need him just the sense to grow just a little bit further and learn around the kind of learning tree that Taz can bring them.
I absolutely agree. I do have to say that MVP, if he didn't wrestle at all, certainly would have been in this category as a contender.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to pick. We'll get to MVP in a bit. At least I will. Next up, we have Most Improved, Joel. Last year we did, by the way, I did Dana Brooke, which I thought she had improved, but nothing really comes up this year. That's a bad one now.
I thought my Lana pick was bad.
Yeah, yeah. Joel picked Lance Archer and Mo and you picked John Moxley. So that was a bad one by me with Dana Brooke, because last year it did seem like she improved and definitely one step forward, 49 steps back. Yeah, Joel?
I actually picked, and this is based on the G1, but I picked Tai Chi. He was someone that was never on my radar in Japan, and he impressed the hell out of me in the G1. I thought there was a lot more good matches from Tai Chi than bad matches. And I thought he just seemed like he grew, which was absolutely crazy. And another one, what was his name? There's another one from Japan from the G1 that impressed me as well that usually didn't. He teams with Goto, Morton. Oh, what's his name? He has a staff that he carries.
It starts with a Y, and I cannot think of the name.
Yoshi.
Yeah, I cannot remember his name. Yeah. You know what? It starts with a Y. I think Yoshihashi is. That sounds right. Yeah.
Like those two, but I thought Tai Chi looked a little bit better, and I was like, this impressed me. And this one was a really hard category for me, and that was just. That's something that stuck out to me even to the end of the year, was how they looked in the G1. So that's where I was like, I'm surprised we got the G1. And that's where I kind of went with my pick.
Juan, where are you going?
I you know what? I think for me, it was based on how well he did in the G1 this year to how well he did in the G1 last year. Now, first off, I have to say Tai Chi, I think, absolutely sucks. So I'm going to get that out of the way. Though I respect your opinion, I think that guy absolutely sucks. But the guy that I think showed an improvement this year, and he was already good, but I think he's gotten much better and he's carrying himself much better. And now he's got a heel persona, and that's Jeff Cobb. And I think that he's wrestling the best he's ever wrestled and looking the best he's ever looked. And, you know, I think right now he's really on fire, and I'm looking forward to his Wrestle Kingdom match. Is going to be a lot of fun against Shingo.
So I need a ruling on this one. So tell me yes or no, because I was debating Roman for this.
I can see it.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. Just because of what Roman was before he left and what he came back to, Roman Reigns is now exactly what the WWE and what wrestling has been wanting Roman to do. His matches mean more. They're still not, you know, as good a quality as maybe as you want, but the matches that he had with Jay were great. The Tribal Chief thing matters. He, for the first time in his career, feels like a legitimate threat, like he legitimately matters. He feels it very important to the level of a Hogan or a Cena that they've wanted him to feel forever. And I think a lot of that was not taken by the company. That was taken into his own hands in the time off that he had for legitimate reasons and the correct reasons.
He doesn't feel like a WWE created character anymore. That's the difference. He feels like, you know, a badass. Yeah. It's amazing it took them this long to get it together.
Yeah. Next up, we have best gimmick. Last year, I picked... Man, I suck last year. I picked Rey Mysterio. What was the gimmick with Rey? Joel, you picked Bray, and Morton, you picked Jon Moxley. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry. This is best comeback. That's why Bray there.
Best comeback.
Best
okay.
comeback. Right. So I'm going to start with this one. This is where I'm going to have Montel Vontavious Porter. This guy was supposed to do a one-off in the Royal Rumble and be done. Then he's like, well, can I have one match on Raw for my kid? Sure, you can have one match. Can I have it against Ray? That's his favorite wrestler. Sure. And then they slowly brought him back. And by the end of the year, he made Bobby Lashley a badass again. He made Shelton Benjamin a regular wrestler and a tag champion again. And he took Cedric Alexander from being a jobber to being a tag team wrestler again and created one of the more interesting stables in the WWE right now. And really kind of hit, maybe not as a wrestler, what he was always supposed to hit in the WWE, and he still wrestles, and that's why, Mo, you're right, he kind of gets kind of taken out of the non-wrestler performer, but what he was able to do this year really hit him on top of the wrestling world as a performer this year.
That's a wicked pick. I have to say, that's a tremendous pick. I'm right there with you. If it hadn't been for Eddie Kingston's comeback, which I think was even further down, like you say, selling his wrestling boots, almost hanging it up, you know, thinking he'd never get in the ring again. If he hadn't been down so much farther and come to the point of main eventing a pay-per-view, if you just look at like consistency and where he came from, MVP it's like, this is a toss up. It's like, it's 51% of me says Eddie Kingston, 49% says MVP, but Eddie Kingston is my pick.
Joel, you going to break the tie or you got something else?
I'm going to break the tie and I'm going to be alongside Martin and I'm picking Eddie Kingston. But the thing is, we've had three comeback this year that I think all stand out. I think Eddie Kingston's emergence is incredible. What he was able to do is just downright mind-boggling, and it definitely deserves to be recognized. What MVP's been able to do this year is remarkable, and just how he's been able to find a spot and help other talent, which is huge. And the other one is Edge.
I was going to say, we didn't even mention Edge. Really.
Yeah, that's so true. That's amazing.
It's because of the injury again, but the fact that the guy came back and wrestled in the Royal Rumble when he was told he could no longer wrestle 9 years ago.
And he had a good match. The greatest wrestling match ever was a joke title, but ended up being a fairly good match.
One of the best matches that the WWE had this year, for sure.
The only thing that hurt it was that camera cut. That's the only thing that hurts it for me. But other than
the title. And the title. For Edge, the spear when Edge came back. Yeah, Eddie Kingston's a great pick for you guys. MVP's close to my heart. I've always been a fan of him, so I had to pick him. They get represented in something, especially.
And I almost picked him too.
So Shelton's maybe my favorite wrestler of all time. So him bringing Shelton back from the dead, I had to give him daps for that. Shelton could be on there too, really, because of where Shelton was.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So next up, we do have best gimmick. Last year.
By the way, Bailey could be on there too, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
She looked like she was dead, not too long ago.
Yeah, she was. It was over. And I mean, really, FTR is another one in many ways as well, right?
Brody Lee, that's true.
Brody Lee, yeah, Brody Lee was one I considered as well on here as well. Yeah. There was a few really good stories of that this year. Best gimmick, you got me and Mona split with Brody Lee with Bray Wyatt, and then Joel, you went with Chris Jericho. Joel, where are you going in this one?
I'm going with a anxious, drunk millennial cowboy. I think Hangman Adam Page's gimmick of just seeing his world implode and just everything that he was earmarked for and how much everyone in the Elite loved him and just how his failures just continue to pile up. And even the things that happened in the tag team match against the Young Bucks and just the self-loathing and the struggle. It's not a grandiose Bray Wyatt-esque character, but it's something that's a little bit more grounded within reality. It's something people can almost relate to. And you could see the crowd was really getting behind Hangman. They were behind Hangman to the point where the Young Bucks were the heels in the match against Kenny and Hangman. I just think, you know, we don't see a lot of gimmicks like that where there's a little bit more reality within it. And I just thought, I'm really excited to see where this, the story pays off. This is one of the things that we've been talking about, is the eventual payoff of Hangman versus Kenny. And it is that redemption arc of him kicking the bottle and getting himself into a spot where he's a world heavyweight champion. And I think that, to me, is why, a spur of a moment, I wrote down Hangman Adam Page and his alcoholism and his struggles this year.
Mine, again, I'm going to Roman Reigns, the tribal chief. It's only been for a handful of months. What they can do with it and what they've been able to do with it is great. What they had when he beat Jay in the Hell in the Cell, and then Afa and Sika came out, I almost lost my damn mind. I almost fell out of my chair. That was so cool. That was just so cool. And something, again, you just don't see WWE do something that cool in a long time. And a really hint of Roman becoming this tribal chief and really what it means and where it's going to lead, maybe with The Rock and other maybe Samoan guys, and him taking away the big dog and the leader of the yard stuff he took from Undertaker and really becoming his own persona and having the Samoan background that he has and everything they can do with that, and being the head of the Samoan family and knowing what the Samoan family's legacy is in the WWE and in professional wrestling. I'm very much into everything they've been able to do with the tribal chief.
I cannot believe I'm the only one picking Orange Cassidy. Not that you guys' picks aren't good, but I just I just like, the guy's gimmick is unique. We haven't seen it before. It's totally new, and it has worked. And the guy's selling so much crazy amounts of merchandise, and he's so entertaining. And I thought this was an easy one. I was just wondering. I was trying to think of how I could argue somebody else so we wouldn't have a sweep on this, you know, coming into this.
I kind of feel like that was surprised. The obvious pick. That was the obvious pick, actually.
I think that was, but I liked that there was variety to this.
Yeah.
Because you're absolutely right on Orange Cassidy, and you're absolutely right on Roman Reigns, and I like to think I'm right on Hangman.
I think those are the three best. Those are the three best.
Yeah, I'd say those are the three best. Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple other guys who have good gimmicks too, but those are the three that really stand out, I'd say.
All right. Next up, match of the year. Last year it was Will Ospreay was included in it. Me and Mo Morton both went with Okada and Ospreay. Joel, you changed a little bit. You went Shingo and Ospreay. Morton, where are you going for match of the year?
So, we talked about the match that's maybe the greatest tag team match of all time, and that's the obvious pick, and it was my pick for a long time. I'm going a little more sentimental here because I think this is one of the top five matches of the year, and I'm going to pick it because the more I look back on it now, this violent bloodbath on television dog collar match that is the last match of Brody Lee, where he painted a masterpiece with Cody. It's so intense, such a violent fight, felt so real. And the fact is, he probably was already sick when this happened.
Yeah.
When I consider that, I don't think there's anything. I don't think anything tops it. There's a saying in hockey. They say you're only as good as your last shift. So damn, I hope it's a good one. And that's a direct quote from Lanny McDonald as well again. And I'll say that if you're as good as your last match, then Brody Lee went out as one of the best on the planet, if not the best. That's the best match for me this year.
Joel?
Oh, man.
Mo had the heartstrings there.
I don't know if I... You're absolutely right. Like I'm gonna say my original pick was the Revolution match, Young Bucks, Hangman and Omega, just from an emotional standpoint and how much I had invested in all four guys. But I'm gonna relent on that one, and I'm gonna go with the dog collar match as well, because you're absolutely right. More times than not, you're right, and I'm always hating it.
Well, now I can't be the asshole who doesn't pick this match. So thanks a lot.
What did you have?
I had Okada and Ibushi.
Oh, so good.
I had like that. We'll get to that card. I get it. The Takahashi and Will was close to me too, but that Ospreay, that Okada and Kota match was good. But yes, I will relent too. I think just as a respect and pick Brody and Cody. I mean, I tuned in specifically for that. Everything that they did to the build of that, of Brody just destroying Cody, and then just the vicious beating down of Cody. It was, and I think there was a
and
game
that
on
night, having Greg Valentine and stuff like that,
right?
There,
yeah,
talking about, you know, just to sell the importance of the dog collar match, and yeah, what a good story.
I think there was some game on that night, so I had it on my iPad with no audio on, and I was watching that in the game at the same time, and I was like, this is just brutal. And I didn't even have the sound on, and you could just feel the brutality, even without the audio on it. So I think that's obviously more of a sentimental pick, but still, everything around it too is also, it's just a phenomenal match. But, I didn't want to be the asshole that didn't pick it, but my match would have been Okada and Kota, but I think Morton, you hit it on the head with picking the great one right there.
You know, like I say, he was probably sick. That's what gets me about that.
Yeah.
Because it was so shortly afterwards, he's in the hospital. He was probably already sick, and he has that match. That's that great. All respect.
So next we have angle of the year, and I feel like maybe we'll circle back to this, what led to this match. I had the Lucha Bros and the Bucks. Joel, you also had Lucha Bro and the Bucks. No, Joel, Mo and I both had Lucha Bro and the Bucks, and Joel, you had
It can't be the best. That
feud.
Be the best
feud.
Angle. Feud. Okay.
Feud. Yeah. So yeah, we're getting so far back. So Morton and I both had Lucha and the Bucks, and Joel, you had Kofi and Brian. Joel, where are you going this year for feud of the year?
I think it's a no brainer on this one. I think it's Sasha and Bayley.
That's where I am too.
They were basically performing CPR on a WWE corpse just to kind of keep it going, and I thought they kept it afloat. They really were. Who would have imagined even 5-7 years ago saying that the women are the reason that WWE is relevant and important?
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling to see where they are. It's mind-boggling to see where Sasha and Bayley came from NXT. The simple fact is they're the thing that kept them going. When things got tough, they rose up. And especially in this COVID era, you had to look for guys that would step up.
They were the first thing you saw in the COVID arena. It's the first thing they trusted was Sasha and Bayley. I don't think you need to say any more. In an empty arena where there was no fans and they didn't know how it was going to go, the first two performers they trusted was Sasha and Bayley.
Yeah.
One, who do you got? I'm agreeing with Joel.
I'm not agreeing with you. Only because I don't like how they rushed it at the end.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think it's kind of a situation of the carrying of it throughout the year. The payoff should have been
the carrying
longer
of it
matches.
Throughout the year, but it wasn't like every single week they layered onto the storyline. It just happened, you know. I don't know. When I compare it to like a year-long angle, like the what happened with Omega and Paige, I feel like that was much more logical, but then at the end it twisted and they went in the other direction from what they had set up, which didn't make any sense. So I'm just going feud of the year. It's a short feud, but to me it's back to it again. Best promos of the year came from the best feud of the year for me, and they were consistently by two great promos, and that was Moxley and Kingston. I think that's the feud that to me stands out.
It's a great one, not a doubt. I think it got to the point where, like I said, I wanted Eddie Kingston to win that belt. I thought it really mattered.
I think a lot of people did.
Yeah.
And you know what? He healed on them to make sure that they weren't cheering him.
Yep. It would have been interesting to see what a full arena would have been like for that. Next, we do have Best Angle. Last year, I picked the NXT invasion of SmackDown. Remember how great that was and how much it didn't matter?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. Joel picked Mox to AEW. And Morton probably picked the one that is the most significant still, which was Kenta turning heel.
Yeah.
That. So where are we going? Where are we going for Best Angle, Morton?
Come back to me again, because I was going to go in a direction and now I'm contemplating.
Yeah,
I'm contemplating where I'm going
to go. Maybe we'll go to Joel then.
So I think to me, there's two angles that stand out this year. There's two that pop into my mind right away. Maybe I'm missing something. Last year I missed the Ken turn, which is probably the angle of the year last year. I think the two that stand out to me most are the Kenny heel turn, just how it played out and just what it created for pro wrestling and the buzz that it had, especially with tuning into Impact, really having the first appearance of your new AEW champion on Tuesday nights. And it also led to Big Bicep Tony appearing on a very, very petty paid sponsorship for AEW with Tony Schiavone. And the other one is the Brody Lee beatdown of Cody. Just how shocking, how quick that match was, how devastating, how much they beat the tar out of the Nightmare family and left everyone laying. Brandy, Cody, Arn Anderson, the smashing of the old TNT title, and Brody Lee and the Dark Order standing tall. It's those two that stand out the most. And it's, to me, it may lean more towards the Brody Lee, but I the Kenny one has yet to have a full payoff. So that's where it's kind of neck and neck for me for what it is.
That's where I'm stuck, is between those two. And I think maybe just again as a respect, I think the Kenny thing can carry into next year and we can kind of go back and pay homage to that next year. So I'm going to go with the Brody and Cody for just a homage to Brody again, because I remember the day you called me on that and you're like, you have to see this, and just go ahead.
When I called you, I was telling you that Cody went full Hunter. I made sure you had no idea. I wanted you to be flabbergasted when it happened, because I was flabbergasted when it happened.
Yeah, and it showed like sometimes what a beatdown can really do, especially of a top level performer, of what it can really do and how quickly, you know, even with the Brody Lee character before that, like, you know, he had kind of been up and down. We weren't really sure where everything was going yet. And then, you know, the BTE stuff had been helping his character out. And then this just really, really elevated it to the next level.
Yeah, that was a great beatdown, you know, and definitely the Omega heel turn. As far as like an angle as like to create interest, that's been the best. But the actual night of the angle, the actual match and the finish of that match was kind of awkward.
Yeah.
The one I was going to go with, and I was contemplating whether or not I should go with it, because it feels a bit repetitive to go with Kenta last year and then go with this year, but it is Will Ospreay turning and forming the Empire on Okada and leaving Chaos. It's a little reminiscent of last year, but I just thought it was really well done. I did not see him forming an entire group, and he had been acting heelish, but I just wasn't expecting it. And it really caught me off guard, and I thought it was really well executed. So Ospreay turning heel and forming the Empire is my pick.
I wanted to go, you know, the Jericho Tyson, I thought was a good angle, you know, having, yeah, you know, like all the MMA fighters there.
When we get really the payoff, the payoff.
Yeah.
Yes.
Joel, where are you going? Omega, or are you going Brody Lee Cody?
I'm going to go Brody Lee Cody. The more we talk about it, it's that way.
All right. Next up, we have the best pay-per-view of the year, and I will finally lead off on one of these. I kind of went back and forth. I know some people will think Full Gear, but to me, nothing topped this show for the whole year. For me, it's Wrestle Kingdom Night 1 for me.
Yeah.
That's where you are too, Joel?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, like I said, like, you know, the start of the card was okay, but then, like, you know, once you got to the Kenta match was unbelievable, but the like the Okada match with Ibushi was unbelievable. No, the Okada and Osprey match was very good, and Naito and Ibushi was what am I thinking about?
You're probably thinking night two.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking night one, right? That's the one you had.
I think
the Takahashi Osprey, right? Takahashi Osprey, and you had the Liger stuff on there as well, right? Yeah. Okay. Sorry, I had the wrong card. So you had Okada and Ibushi. You had the Jay White and Naito match, which was really good. Takahashi and Osprey, Moxley and Lance was very good. And like I said too, there was some of the Liger stuff. Everything that happened with Liger the next day was really cool too. And we didn't talk a lot about Liger on here, so I wanted to give the shout out to Liger and everything he met and everything like that. Seeing him retire this year was a huge bummer. We had Liger and Taker both retire this year, which is pretty crazy. But yeah, for me, it's Wrestle Kingdom 14, night one. And Joel, you have the same
one? Joel said this. It was the same one as well, but that's my second best. For me, it is Full Gear. I just think top to bottom, that card just so loaded. So many matches that were so good. I just so consistent. And the build for every single match, so good. That was the key for me, was how good all those builds were.
It
was Full Gear.
Promotion of the year. I don't think we have to talk too much about this because we do want to save a little bit of time. It's a clean sweep, right?
It's AEW.
Purely based on tonight.
Same with television show too, just to kill two birds with one stone is Dynamite.
And here's my piece on this. This, and I've said this once, but I want to say it again. This is a company that should be in a lot of trouble because it's a freaking pandemic. You're not having your audience. It's a new product. Tony's new to the business. All the wheels should have come off. The wheels absolutely should have come off. But I felt they handled COVID decently with the wrestlers. They moved big matches constantly because of potential exposures. They had handled Daly's place somewhat safely for the most part. There's still some there's very murky waters with having an audience, but they told engaging stories still. They brought in talent. They didn't lay anyone off. Everything they've done for Brody Lee's family in the last 72 hours. This is the company I want to support. This is the company I want to give money. I gladly paid for all their pay-per-views this year, and I will gladly pay for all their pay-per-views next year.
The combination, like you say, of the in-ring product and the classiness of the company and the way they handle things makes it an easy pick.
Yeah. And our intelligence.
Yeah.
90% of the time, our intelligence isn't insulted. I don't feel like I'm being treated like an idiot. I feel like they're fairly straightforward with their storylines.
Yeah, I agree.
I think everything.
Who else can't wait for that game when you get to be the AEW general manager?
Yeah, oh, exactly.
Looking game.
Next up is we have breakout star next year. I think Morton, you did the best. You picked Darby. You picked Darby. Joel, you picked Shingo. Not bad. I picked Keith Lee. Mixed results. Joel, who are you going with this year?
Whoa.
For 2021, I suppose.
2021. It's going to be a lot of. I'm kind of torn right now. I'm gonna say I think we see Hangman Adam Page take yet another step in 2021. I think
so. He's your breakout, though.
See, this is
This is kind of a guy that hasn't been there and is going to the next level. That's what I kind of take this award as.
I think him reaching main event status is breaking out.
He been there, though?
I don't think he has had any main events.
He's had very first matches,
but I don't think he's ever been the main.
Very first show?
I mean, he's done that, how often after that did he do it?
He hasn't been a consistent main eventer. He's been upper mid card.
Yeah.
I'll say that. Yeah.
I think I'm gonna stick with this one. He's gonna break it main event scene. He's going to break into the main
event. Well, is it who broke out this? Are we doing? Is this category who broke out this last year? Or is it who's going to break out next year?
It is breakout star this year. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well,
so it's breakout star. So then that's Heyman's a possible one for sure.
Then my pick for this year is John Silver. Or not John Silver, Brody Lee. Brody Lee. I had my notes mixed up. This was a guy that even when he came in and he was doing a bit of the Vince impression, everyone's like, I don't know. Maybe
I didn't like it. I wasn't a fan of it.
Maybe he just doesn't have it. And then by the end of the year, you knew he had it. And you knew that this guy was going to be a future world heavyweight champion. He was going to tear through Japan.
I can't tell you guys how much I wanted to see him and Lance Archer go at it. That was like one of my dream matches.
I feel like you look at this and you go, him and the Dark Order broke out this year. I feel like how they ended this time last year to how they ended this year, mind you, this is under different circumstances, which is incredibly unfortunate. But I felt like what they did on BTE, it's another group of wrestlers that got over on BTE just being themselves, betting on themselves and just doing their schnick. Like Brody Lee with Sue, like little things like that. Like it felt like Brody Lee had so much range and so much capability that you thought next year was his year to rise. Who knows what would have happened if an injury had happened? Would they have potentially put the title on Brody Lee and let him run as a world heavyweight champion? And I mean, the other thing that he helped break out was the Beaver Boys, which was a nobody tag team that didn't mean anything to most people outside of the hardcore indie fans that followed them. And yet now John Silver and Alex Reynolds are two people I'm rooting for. Evil Uno and Stu Grayson are two people you're rooting for more because of what they were able to do this year because they got paired up with Brody Lee.
Dark Order has to be baby faces going forward, don't they?
Yep, absolutely. With Silver's pin and just his reaction afterwards, I can't see any reason why you would root against this group.
He's someone without the fans. I think at one point this year you would have almost said Otis for this, and then because the fans would have helped, and then with no fans, that definitely drowned it. And he kind of shows the power of what AEW is able to do. Of John Silver with the fans would have been so powerful, and they've been able to make him work without the fans.
And that's where I just think the guy that broke out this year the most is Brody Lee. I don't think there's anyone else. I don't know.
Well, I went in a different direction. I mean, I think Brody Lee is an excellent choice. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I actually considered, I mean, for me, I actually went with people that were already in main spots, but this year won over instead of it feeling forced. Okay, I was going to go Asuka, put it that way, because she won over Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
And that made her a breakout star because that was something I thought could never happen.
That's a good pick.
That was who I was going to go with. Or the person I actually did go with. It was back and forth between these two. The other one was somebody who, they were forcing into a main event spot and you didn't buy him as a main eventer 1 year ago. Or you were just starting to. But now there's no question he's a main eventer. You buy him in that role, and that's Jay White.
Mm-hmm. Is that your pick?
That's my pick.
Nice. Yeah, I think you know, you and I and Joel had talked about, you know, where he was when he got that title for the first time and if he was ready or not, but now it definitely seems like he's in a much better spot.
Now you wouldn't deny it. If he got the title, you'd be like, okay, that's fine. You know, he's going to main event the Tokyo Dome. And the second night, there's still a big push to see, you know, how well he does on that. But since they're only allowed 5,000 fans in the stadium, it doesn't really matter much. As far as how he feels during the G1, he felt like a main eventer for the first time for me.
My pick was Asuka, by the way. I'm not going to get more. You kind of nailed everything there. So mine's Asuka.
I I'm very curious to see how Japan does with the 5,000 for each Don show. That's going to be a very interesting thing to kick off 2021 with.
Yep. Next up, my favorite award of the year, the Shit Sandwich Award. And, you know, a few years ago, we made fun of Joel for picking Enzo. And sometimes you got to own your shit sandwich. Sometimes you got to do. You know, you two picked Jon Moxley. I picked Baron Corbin. Yeah, I picked Baron Corbin last year.
We've all been there.
We make mistakes. I really thought he improved last year. I thought he was on like a path to kind of figure out his character and everything like that. And no, I could spit that shit back out because I was correct that he was garbage.
So explain this category to me again. It's someone that you
thought was done or someone you thought was garbage, and then you're like, okay, I have to eat shit because I was wrong. Joel?
All right.
Well, it ties again with the breakout. At the end of last year, I thought Dark Order was done. I thought
we're in the same spot here.
I thought there was nothing. They had the whiff of the punch on Dustin. They had just the yanking of teeth from I thought was Brandon Cutler. Like, it just was bad. And the Bucks said in 6 months' time the Dark Order will be over, and it may not have been 6 months, but Jesus, they were right. They found a way to make Dark Order work. They found a way to tell the story. They found a way to make things click.
Yeah, that's my pick as well. It's just because they were nothing. You know, the fake punches on Dustin Rhodes and how bad that was and how that was all over the... You know, I made SportsCenter of just a laughable moment of how terrible pro wrestling is, and you know, for some of the mainstream people, and they turned the Dark Order to something that tonight, what I've just heard now was on ESPN, to a sense of who is this group. They look super cool and I'm interested in them.
Yeah, that was a great pick. I have to say for myself, I thought Bailey would never work as a heel. I said it publicly. Oh, I deserve that sandwich because I was wrong about Bailey as a heel.
Yeah, I don't think any of us thought it was work, even with the music and everything, and you know, because she just seemed like the ultimate layup of a face, right? The John Cena.
She should have been the Daniel Bryan of the
women's Bryan division. The Cena, like it was there.
Yeah,
and
it was there, and they blew it. So I thought this was never gonna work.
Yeah,
and it started off awkward with her cutting down those you know. inflated things, which hadn't been around for weeks or months or whatever anyways, and then acting like it was such a big deal when I'm like, but you haven't had them around. This just feels, everything feels rushed and hurried again, and I thought this is never going to work, and then, you know, obviously it did.
All right, next up is, I would be shocked if this isn't a clean sweep, the biggest story of the year. Jeez, I wonder what that was, guys. It's the biggest story of what happened in the world. There was this thing called the global pandemic. Is there any objections to this?
That's the biggest story of the year is COVID-19 and how it affected wrestling and the rest of the world. Yeah.
It
took Mania away. It took WrestleMania away too. You know, it was a good Mania show, to be honest, for the most part, but just it made us learn. It's like we've been saying for the NBA in a lot of these sports. You learn to do stuff that maybe you wanted to try before that you couldn't do. I think the digital fans that they use in the Thunderdome, I think that's something WWE will use going forward. AEW learning different things of having the wrestlers around there and trying that. It was, and you know, learning how to have matches without fans. It did a lot of stuff to teach the business how to do stuff without fans there, and then how to enhance when you get fans back.
It also, though, highlighted just how important the fans and that live crowd is.
Yes.
And you know, how much of the secret sauce that makes wrestling so damn tasty is the fan, you know, has really been driven home.
Yeah. Joel?
It's COVID. Like, this is life altering. This year has been life altering for what has happened. And it's a global pandemic and it's still ongoing. I don't know when this is going to end.
well, we're coming up to the Rumble, and it sounded like they wanted fans, but I don't think that's going to happen now. If they do, I think it'll be kind of like what you've seen in NXT, where you have the Thunderdome thing with maybe selective fans around, but I don't know if they will, and I think it'll make for a very interesting Royal Rumble this year, where you can like use the Thunderdome and use the screens to do the countdown and everything like that. I don't know. I mean, Mania is probably going to have fans, and it's probably going to go back to Tampa, seeing as the Super Bowl is in Tampa and is going to have fans there. And if the Super Bowl has fans, you better believe the WWE is going to have fans, and who knows where we are with the vaccine by then. And, you know, where Wrestle Kingdom is going to be and stuff. There's a lot of interesting questions going forward, but just, you know, it's just changed so much. And Bill Simmons brought it up a lot of times watching with his sons.
Everything is written in pencil.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everything you're saying about the Super Bowl having fans and everything, everything's written in pencil because everything can change.
Well, we've seen the NFL doesn't give a fuck.
No, the talk NFL to the Broncos.
To the Broncos.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. Talk to the Ravens and the Steelers.
Yeah, that's
they don't give a fuck. Being a commissioner with fantasy football during COVID was not fun. That's a story for another day.
This is the worst year for fantasy football. This is my
tell least, me about least it. I lost by one ever. Fucking point in the championship.
Well, at least Jalen you lost, Hurts so that makes me
fumbled
feel
the ball. Jalen Hurts didn't fumble the ball. Anyways, yeah, it's COVID and what it did. Next we have to the favorite part. Now we get to shit on stuff, which is always fun. Worst wrestler of the year. Last year we did you a favor more and we clean sweeped on Shane for you.
Did we?
Yeah, we clean sweeped on Shane last year. Joel,
I hope we can clean sweep again this year.
Joel, who do you got?
So I don't have one individual, but my worst wrestler of the year is Joey Ryan, Marty Scurll, Matt Riddle, Velveteen Dream. The list can go on and on. Because everything that came out from the speaking out, anyone that was trusted.
You're doing what Scott Rowland did today for our worst team of the year. Well, I went with the Jets. He went literal and went with the Astros.
It's,
you're going not the worst, like they sucked. You're going, they're pieces of shit.
This is the scumbags that were entrusted with their coworkers' safety, and they neglected it. Fan safety, and they neglected it. They took advantage of vulnerable women and potential males. Velveteen Dream still has a job. Matt Riddle still has a job.
Matt Riddle just signed an extension today, by the way.
Joey Ryan's trying to sue the people that spoke out. Marty Scurll will probably have a job at some point. Let's not kid ourselves.
Well, he's not unemployed. He's just off TV.
Yeah. So he'll probably be back sooner rather than later.
I assume he's being paid since he's still under contract.
I imagine so, after signing a very lucrative contract with Ring of Honor. The fact remains that this to me is bigger than what you do in the ring. This is bigger than looking like the worst thing ever and not being able to throw a punch. This is literally damaging your industry and causing harm and pain to people that didn't deserve it. And this whole list, every one of them should be called out. Austin Theory, I go on and on. There's some of them that have lost their jobs. Someone like Jordan Devlin still has his job. So
a lot of these guys still are employed by WWE.
A lot of these guys still are. Jack Gallagher is pretty much the only one, you know, who deservedly was fired, and the others deserve it too.
And I would say a podcast that took us off doing pods for 2 months, but just a tremendous appearance by Haley Jermaine on that one. I'm very glad that we were able to get her and hit on that. That's a great pick by you, Joel. Are you going to go that way as well, Mo, or are you going to go more in the literal sense in the ring?
I was going to go more in the literal sense. I was going to go Nia Jax. I mean,
have female though. We have female, so you can get there. This is male.
Okay. Yeah. This is male. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I mean, she's the worst of both, you know, ring.
Yeah.
But I mean, Joel's right. Like those people, all of them that he mentioned.
Yeah, I'll clean sweep that one. I think that's a fair one.
Clean sweep that. Yeah.
Yeah, I just put scumbag. Yeah,
Joel said it perfectly.
and then female, we can just And female, do we just want a clean sweep on what Nia is? Because she came back and she already hurt people again and she's terrible.
Well, here's the thing with Nia, that they're sending like
she's Otis terrible
and Keith Lee back for training. But a chronic history of injuring people, and they refuse to send her back for proper training. They refuse because of her connection, and they don't want to upset the family because, God forbid, they do right by the safety of their performers. This is why this company is so incredibly infuriating, and I have not watched a WWE pay-per-view in months. I have not.
They probably know that they can't teach her. They probably know that there's no – they probably try and teach her on the main roster, and they can't. I'm guessing there's no way she can get more training and get better. She sucks. She's dangerous. Yeah. She doesn't know how to work. She doesn't know her own strength or lack of it. Even little things like when she's thrown into the ropes by somebody, she'll be uncooperative and not move for them the proper way that you're supposed to. Just she's never got it. She doesn't get it. She won't get it. She's impossible, and
she's the only person fired, in this.
But no, it will never happen.
We've done this now since I think 2016, and Joel and I did one in 2015. We didn't keep track of, but she has been picked by at least one of us every single year. Yeah, every single year, she's been picked by one of us. Last year, Joel and Morin, you went with Lacey Evans. I still stayed with Nia, but it's just she continually just gets people hurt. It's not safe for her to be in the ring. She just hasn't improved in any way. I've never seen anything that Nia's done, and she's you know gradually over time, even the worst performer finds a niche to get a little bit better and gets them over to the next level.
Usually,
she has done nothing at any point that made me make you feel even the stuff with Bliss. When she was getting bullied, you didn't really feel bad for her. She's never done anything to really make you care about her. She is just terrible.
Just to go backwards one thing, by the way, Tai Chi was going to be my choice for men. Tokyo Pimp.
Yeah. Joel, anything to add before we get to tag team?
You look at her and you go, this is, you're in the business of protecting these performers. You always talk about Bret Hart and how he took pride in protecting everyone he worked with. And this woman is anti-mask, anti-COVID, all of that. So not as she.
Oh, is she?
Yeah. There've been, she has made posts online. So not only is she not safe in the ring, she's not safe outside of the ring. And that's where you have old people that WWE is bringing around that you could kill because you're not being safe. You're not following the rules and you're running the risk of other people. So
she seriously can't be that smart. She seriously does not seem that bright.
No.
It's infuriating.
Even Eva Marie improved and she has not. Eva Marie got to stuff where you're like, okay, Eva did this and that's interesting. Nia Jax could never even do that. And Eva Marie was the worst female wrestler I maybe ever seen since Kelly Kelly. And even Kelly Kelly improved a little bit.
Yeah.
She couldn't hit the ropes without being like, it's embarrassing how terrible she is. And I'm going to pick her in my next category for worst tag team. I'm picking her and Baszler. Baszler.
No, it's nothing against Baszler. I also picked them for my worst tag team, but you know what? The only thing I love is the fact that you know, she has heat with Ronda Rousey, and then she's put with Baszler, and it's almost like a rib on her.
Yeah.
And that's deserved. But other than that, the terrible tag team because she sucks.
Yeah, she sucks. Baszler did everything she could to save it. Yeah, and they're awkward. Again, all respect to Shayna Baszler. She's a tremendous performer. This has nothing to do with her. As much as it had to do with Nia. Joel, are you going to clean sweep us with that one?
Clean sweep. I had nothing listed. I was waiting to see what you guys would say.
Sure. Yeah, I just thought it was a terrible fit. And when they got – and it just – for where the women's tag team – the tag team titles have just been good on, what, two people? They were kind of okay in the Iconics for a little bit. And they didn't make it work with them. Like, it was entertaining. The Iconics were trying to make it entertaining, and they did for the few little bit, and then – we'll get to Iconic stuff in a bit.
Well, the problem with the Iconics is that they were champions and lost every single match. Yeah, they never lost the belt. That's stupid.
And Sasha and Bayley kind of made the tag team championships mad a little bit, and then we had the stuff with Asuka Kairi Sane. Yeah, Kairi Sane.
Yeah.
And you were like, oh, this will be a really good tag team match, and we never really got to that. The women's tag match belts have just kind of been a disaster in WWE, and Nia and Baszler was kind of one of the worst part of all of that. Worst on the microphone. I'm just going to say Nia again, because whenever she talks, I want to put the television on.
I think
on
she's
mute.
Horrible on the mic. I totally, yeah. That was my pick too. I think she's so bad. She's so boring. She sounds,
yeah.
She has no inflection in her voice whatsoever. She sounds more robotic than freaking Linda McMahon.
Yeah. I want a divorce. Still the best line ever. Joel, do you have anyone different here?
No, clean sweep again.
I love the Nia. I'm going to call the worst awards the Nia Jack Award, because she's earned it, because she's been used more than anybody.
She's earned it.
Yeah. Now we can kind of be a little bit nice to someone. The most underutilized performer, so this is someone that we don't think uses correctly. Last year, I picked Samoa Joe. Joel, you picked Andrade, and Morton, you picked Sami Zayn. So, same ones?
I'm going to change it up. I'm going to go with Chad Gable.
Yeah, I agree. That's what I had as well.
That's actually what I had, too, so that's a clean sweep.
Yeah. Please let him go.
The guy's
he's
so
a tag
damn
team with
talented.
Otis now. He's a tag team with Otis now. At least he's not Shorty G anymore. So that's
no, he's not Shorty G anymore. And at least he's kind of acting heelish in the tag team with Otis. Yeah. So maybe he'll have a little personality then break out, and him and Otis will wrestle each other. But then he has to carry Otis in matches. Otis is best in a tag team because he's super charismatic, but can't really go for a long match for very long by himself. He gets exposed. So, I mean, he is best in a tag team, but I don't see that tag team lasting long, unfortunately. No, but Shorty G or Chad Gable, yeah, great choice. I mean, I think we all agree. The guy needs to leave WWE so bad.
So bad. What he could do. So, by the way, for Mike, the year beforehand, it was a clean sweep of Lacey Evans, and now it's Nia. The worst gimmick of the year. Last year, me and Moten both picked Bray Wyatt because of the Fiend falling apart, and Joel, you went with the Liberian.
Isn't it hilarious? Last year, if you remember, I picked him. I think both of us didn't we pick him both as best and worst gimmick?
Yeah, because it was. Yeah, because it was. That's the funny thing. And Joel, you picked the Liberian, which was really bad. Joel, I'll let you lead off on this one.
So I think this happened this year. But Rusev as a cuck, like that whole thing that they had going on with Rusev.
Yeah, it kind of was like the start of December and then got into January. So I'll let you have that.
Like, I just felt like...
Just the whole Lashley, Lana, everything.
And like you had the lesbian angle to it that was really unnecessarily and really
that it died down right away. They didn't even go forward with it.
Yeah, and I mean the Rusev never got a win over Lashley. Like it just seemed like such a incredibly dumb thing to have going on. And it just like the way they portrayed Rusev was very very poor. I'm very curious to see what Rusev's going to do or Miro is going to do in 2021 as he's still slowly kind of shaking off everything that.
Yeah, he hasn't been utilized so much, so great yet. But you feel like they're biding their time with him. It's going to happen.
Well, look what happened with Brody, right?
Yeah.
That's why you kind of feel okay. Morton, what do you got? Because I got mine.
Okay, you go yours. I had mine, and all of a sudden, literally, it slipped my brain.
I just gotta get it just pulled up here what I had. Okay, so T-Bar, Mace, Slapjack, and Reckoning Retribution. Just a terrible, you know, it started off kind of cool of like, oh, this group is gonna come, and this could be part of Angle too. But as far as the gimmick of like, you know, you had everything kind of going on with the Black Lives Matter, and this is like an Antifa group and whatnot. Whatever, you know, knowing the McMahon's side with, you know, how they lean politically, and just, you know, just being an abomination for all these characters. It's not even as much the group, but what you did to Dijak, and making him T-bar and what you did to a lot of these other talented wrestlers. It was just it's been a terrible
game. What a waste of Mustafa Ali.
And Mustafa Ali as well. You know, they kind of hit off the hacker thing, which was like, well, it's a point with WWE. You're just like, well, at least they paid off a gimmick, I guess.
Mustafa Ali should be like the most, like such a great baby face, just the most like uplifting storyline, former police officer, put his life on the line, literally, you know, has all these great stories of true life heroics. And you do that with him. It's just disgusting. But I'm back to The Fiend again. I think 2 years in a row, this is the worst gimmick. You know, dude was lit on fire, and it's
I was nobody about to cares. Say it's fried.
Stupid.
Are you going Fiend / Bliss or just Fiend? Fiend.
I'm going Fiend. You know, that's where it really falls apart. And the reason why is very simple. When it first showed up, the reason why it was good was because it was all his creativity. He was gone for a long time. He was, you know, he had a lot of time to come up with the gimmick and come up with all the different elements of the Bray Wyatt character and the Fiend character and all this stuff. And it really worked because it was all his creativity. And over time, it's become WWE creative has taken it over. And as we see, anytime there's any sort of supernatural element to a character, WWE creative just sucks with it. They just do not know how to roll with it at all. And I just think it's awful. And he has awful matches.
He does. Next up, we have the worst match of the year. It was a clean sweep last year. Seth and Bray. Mine, and we're probably going to hear a lot about this. I have Super Showdown. I'm going to go Brock and Ricochet. Because of what this did to Ricochet after. It, number one, there was no the build to it was really nothing. It was like, okay, Ricochet had a really nice showing in the Rumble. And he was kind of like, okay, this is all going well. And then the match was just nothing. You didn't let Ricochet, you at this point had Brian showcase what he could do against Brock. You had AJ show, Brian show, Finn show. We're like, okay, cool. These guys have showed what they can do in the ring against Brock. So Ricochet is going to do, you know, he's going to lose the match. Absolutely. But he's going to showcase what he could do. And no, it was just an absolute joke of a match, and just shouldn't even. This is the same one you also had Goldberg versus The Fiend that I debated as well, but this one to me, this is also the lowest rated match, and it was one of only three matches that Meltzer gave -1 this year.
Well, I'll go next here. Honorable mention to for me the I guess it was the Money in the Bank match. Which is awful. I hated that cinematic match, but
I liked it. But yeah, I know you.
Yeah, I know. I hated it. I'm not liar on that one. Especially the way Otis won. Oh man, I hated
the cinematic Bray and Strowman, and I debated doing that one because I really hated that match.
That sucked. That sucked too. I'll agree with that. Yeah. But the one that I think is the worst match of the year is because it's so damn boring, and it was cinematic in its nature as well. And it was Orton and Edge at Mania.
That's not good. Yeah, that was 45 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah.
45 days, it felt like. It just went on and on and on. And the fact that we had seen other cinematic matches happening, and then they followed that up with a match almost as bad the next night that shouldn't have been in Gargano versus Ciampa. It just went on and on and on.
Yeah. That's a great pick.
Yeah, that's my pick.
They followed up with a good match. Joel,
they followed up with an excellent match, you know.
Great match.
Yeah, I think the second or third best match of the year for, you know, probably Walter versus, what's his name
that was
here?
Very good.
Yeah. I cannot think of the Russian name.
It's like jug, whatever.
Yeah, but anyways, that's probably the best match of the year. But
it's Gargano and Ciampa for me. Just
We watched that together.
Yeah,
that's the downfall of NXT.
Just
it's amazing how this is the first time NXT has won a category all night.
Yeah. Yep. Well, it's gonna win another category for me in a bit.
It was bad. It was really, 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 really bad, and especially considering the two performers you had, what they meant, the storyline they told. and you just WWE'd it up. Like it's bad. I have nothing more to say on it. Bad.
Agreed. I mentioned it during mine. It was that they followed up the Edge and Norton with that one the next night and just went on and on and on too. Yeah.
Next up, we have worst feud of the year. Morton and I both picked Seth, Becky versus Lacey and Corbin. And Joel, you picked Seth versus Twitter, which is pretty good still.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Why doesn't he kick us off this time?
Yeah, I'll let you kick it off because you win just off of that one.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't have anything nearly as creative, but my worst feud is Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte because it did nothing for Rhea Ripley. It just feels like now Rhea Ripley.
You got a good match out of it, though.
You got a good match, but yeah. Did it elevate Rhea Ripley? Did it bring her to that level? Because if it didn't, then the match was pointless. It was just to put another feather in Charlotte's cap.
That's a really good pick.
There was no furthering of it. There's no point of it. You could have had other matches across the board, but you again chose to just go with Charlotte for whatever reason.
You know, Joel breaking up a little bit. Do we still got you, Morton?
I'm still here. He didn't break up for me.
Uh-oh. We're just at the tail end too, Morton.
Okay, then we're good. It was just on my side then.
Yeah.
Sure, we're good.
Just terrible. Like, and Hunter was like, there'll be a payoff. What was the payoff for this story? Can you guys tell me what happened?
There wasn't one because WWE sucks. A really good pick, man.
I went back and forth in mine. So a few honorable mentions: Street Profits versus the Viking Raiders.
That was bad.
So bad, and it just what you did with War Machine was absolutely devastating there. Roman at the beginning of the year versus Corbin with the dog food.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
really
yeah,
bad.
That was bad.
But nothing to me was. And Joel's, yours was a very good point. Mine was Strowman and Bray. This just got dragged out and just nothing good happened until Roman showed up and just mercifully got us out of whatever this shit was, because they had all the weird, I mean, the Bliss stuff, I guess, is kind of worked out of it. So that's kind of good, but it's just been, they had a terrible cinematic match. They had the regular matches between each other where it just didn't work. Braun as a champion just didn't work at all. I thought you guys brought up a great point on one pod that I wasn't there, that he was one of the biggest begging factors of not having fans there because they would have booed the living hell out of him. They had no good matches. The feud didn't leave anybody caring about it, and it really drove down the SmackDown ratings, and it just feels like now SmackDown's finally kind of rehabbing from this terrible world championship program.
I totally agree, and I'm building off of that because I think that's that horrible feud leads into the next horrible feud for Bray, which is against Orton, and it's there's something, and it's the fact that I think what was it 2 years ago, 3 years ago, at least a couple of us picked Orton versus Bray Wyatt as the worst feud of the year.
Orton and, almost would have been on this list at one point for my Wrestler of the Year, by the way. At one point,
he was doing great.
Yeah.
When he turned heel again and him and Edge and all that stuff, for a while there. And then afterwards, even, he was hot until he ran into this thing. And it's just, it's so stupid. And it's building off of a stupid feud from a few years ago. And it's just, these two are, like I say, Bray, anybody with Supernatural, the WWE creative, if you want to call it that, ironically, it's all awful, but there's something about these two together. Like it's like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. There was just something about them together that was magical. There's just something about these two together that is an utter piece of coal in the stocking,
Yeah.
It's just awful.
Next up we have worst wrestling angle of the year. And there was a few. I talked about the dog food one. The Vikings Raiders stuff was really bad. To me, I'm just sick of this Jeff Hardy alcoholic stuff. Like, oh, yeah. I get it. He was an alcoholic. We've done it with all these people. Just stop and let him be a wrestler. But the stuff they did with him and Sheamus was just bad. And I'm just really sick of seeing, like, Jeff was an alcoholic. And just, it's the stuff that WWE does is hit at your low point and make you overcome it. And he did. But it just, I think we're all just so done with it. And then the worst part about it for me was the George Floyd stuff happens. The world is burning. The streets in the states are burning. We're dealing with a pandemic. We're in a lockdown. And I have no sports. And I needed an outlet for 2 hours to not think about everything that had gone on. I had been on the phone all day with my Black friends, crying and upset. And I'd been through a lot of emotional calls. And I just needed to turn SmackDown on for 2 hours to not think about anything. And what's the first fucking thing I see? A crash car, police officers with a drunk Jeff Hardy. It's like, this is the one thing I did not want to have in my thought. It was so distasteful for the moment of everything like that. Just terrible. Just terrible. And then they continue to go forward with it. And they never even had a payoff with it. They never said if Elias did it or not or whatever. It just continually batting you over the head with it. So that's mine.
That's my pick as well.
And it is a bad pick. It is so tasteless. I really hate Alexa Bliss lighting herself on fire. It was so stupid. But it's my worst is from the same night. It's from this last week. It is the worst angle for me is Miz cashing in his money in the bank and then getting it given back to him.
John Morrison cashed it in,
though. Oh, yes. John Morrison cashed it in, but he got to be in the match. He had the match. He could have won the title in the match. And he had given up having it, and they just gave it to him. They just give it right back. Like, they clearly have no plans. I just think that's beyond stupid.
Yeah,
I think it's the type of angle that made me go, they don't care. They're putting no effort in, so why would I care? Why should I put the effort in to watch this shit?
When I told Joel, he didn't believe me. He's like, they're not that stupid. I'm like, yep, they are.
Oh, they're that dumb. They're that dumb.
So next one, we're going to get through a lot really quickly here. So first off, worst pay-per-view of the year. I'm going the Super Showdown to start off the year. Number one, everything around that show is already bullshit. But I already talked about the Brock and Ricochet stuff was stupid. The Goldberg stuff was stupid. They had a random match with R-Truth and AJ. That also was one of the few matches that Meltzer gave a negative one. It was just, and I was foolish enough to watch most of that show. It's just a terrible show for all the reasons.
I think the Saudi shows just automatically slot into this role now. I think this is the Saudi award.
You have the same one, Joel?
Yeah.
I have it as well. So this is a clean sweep. It'll be interesting if they don't get to Saudi next year, what they can do to make the worst show next year. Cause you know, it's still coming from WWE.
Yeah. And then I think we can kind of, you know, speed things up a little bit more here because worst promotion is WWE.
Yeah.
And I thought in the ring it was a better year, honestly, for them. And I thought the angles were a little bit better.
Raw isn't. Raw is terrible. SmackDown isn't as bad, but
no.
Raw is terrible.
Yeah, and that's just to get ahead before we kind of shit all over WWE. That's everyone's worst show of the year too is Raw.
It's Raw for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think for WWE too, it's just, you know, the cutting of people during a pandemic to me alone makes them the worst company of the year. Totally. I just was flabbergasted especially with the team like the Good Brothers. You just re-signed them and they got on their own feet and they're in a better place now. So that's great. And I don't think we would have got what we got from Rowan tonight if not, but it was just a situation of, it's in a pandemic and you're cutting people right now. You're furloughing Lance Storm, who just got a job with you. Just that stuff was
while you're making record profits. Don't forget that part.
We need to make budget cuts. Don't. No, you don't.
And they did that. Their handling of the Me Too stuff would do it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like there's so many things. The hell, let's be honest, the in-ring product of Raw would do it alone, probably.
Yeah.
But there's so many other things that are just disgusting. The handling of, in general of the what did they have? Three outbreaks from COVID?
Yeah, well, just like the no masks and just even Kevin Owens kind of talking about how things were done and just, you know, kind of keeping, you know, I'm sure we're going to hear a thing from people left, like people having COVID outbreaks and being, be quiet. I mean, the whole outbreak they had at NXT and half the card, half the people having to be removed because of everything that they had there. It's just, it's, yeah, it's been just a lot terrible. Of negative bad terrible stuff company. There. Joel?
I can say this, everything that happened tonight with Brody Lee's family, I don't have faith in WWE to have handled it the same way AEW would have. I don't watch WWE anymore. I really don't. I haven't watched Raw in forever. I haven't watched SmackDown in forever. I haven't watched NXT in a long time. I haven't watched pay-per-views in a long time. I've become a two wrestling company fan.
Which of us has a WWE Network subscription now? I don't.
Joel does.
I've still got it sitting there, but that's just, it kind of just sits there. I think it's going to be gone sooner rather. Well, Rumble's coming up.
This is the reason right now you have it. You have it for these next 4 months, and then after that, like, what do they do to keep you? Because I will always watch the Royal Rumble. No matter how disenchanted I am, I will always watch the Royal Rumble. It is my favorite wrestling pay-per-view, and I will watch it no matter what, and I will always watch WrestleMania. Till the day I die, I will always watch those two shows no matter what. It just is what it is.
Old habits die hard, but it's the reality is, it's like, I don't care about NXT. You've killed NXT this year. Arguably, NXT Portland should be up there for show of the year because that's really when things.
Some people have that as the best show of the year, by the way. I've seen a few people have that as the best show of the year.
I feel like that was when Tailspin started.
I agree. And then Raw, I don't think there's a question there if Raw just, you know, the ratings have kind of shown it, and even AEW beating some of the demos there.
They have lost in 2.5 years over 1 million viewers. I mean, come on.
Yep. We're bringing the Legends back next week, and it's going to be sad.
That's good.
It will do 2 million next week. It will, because the Legends are draws, and they're not going against football. So that's going to be, you know, a bump for them. But what after that?
Yeah,
and what will you do when the Legends are there? How are you going to promote the Rumble? How are you going to promote with Drew McIntyre? And I feel bad not having Drew McIntyre on this list because I think he's done pretty decent this year, but there was just no room for him. And same with a guy like Randy Orton. But
he's being well booked. He's being well booked. He's been one of the few well booked people, and he's come through 100%. But the fact is, he's had to be the champion the whole year without fans there, and you can't really judge him properly because of that.
And finally, the worst announcer of the year, as the resident guy that does play-by-play here, I'm going to lead off. By God almighty, it has to be done. It's Jim Ross.
Yeah.
He's terrible. He's just, it's done. He some of the comments he makes are there's borderline some racist comments. There's borderline some sexist comments. And it's the same reason we kind of got rid of Jerry Lawler when he had the Roman the Oriental Noodle comment on Tazaka. It's past them now. And you just kind of comments in the ring about not like liking certain people's styles and stuff like that. The wrestling business is now passed Jim Ross by.
Yeah.
And it hasn't passed Shivani by, and because Shivani's not just a wrestling broadcaster, he's a broadcaster. And Jim Ross is strictly a wrestling broadcaster, and he loves wrestling, and he's had a tough life in the last handful of years with the palsy and Jan dying, and I have nothing but sympathy for him, and he's always a legend, but he has taken so many steps back to the point I think I would take him off, put Jericho on, and cut your losses.
That's where Jericho's going. I think that's Jericho's next career move. Regardless of what you think of Jericho and some of the incredibly dumb, asinine, stupid, downright dumb things he's said online, he's good at. I'd take him over JR on, because at least Jericho can get guys over. I don't feel like JR gets guys over.
No, he shits on people. He
did it tonight twice. Twice there was two moments again, even here tonight. Like I think Michael Cole sucks. I got to throw that out there. It's easy to pick him, but tonight. Here's John Silver out in the ring, rustling, emotional. And he's complaining about his outfit that he's wearing, which is given to him by Brody Lee and is a duplicate of Brody Lee's outfit. And he's complaining about how it makes him look like a farmer. You know, totally inappropriate, totally the wrong time, totally everything. Right at the end, he goes, the heels come out, Team Taz comes out for the main event, and he goes, and we got Darby Allin coming up, which he wasn't in the match. You know, like, he's thinking Orange Cassidy, but he says Darby Allin. Like, he just can't get anything
Jungle
right.
Boy Jack, Jungle Boy Jack, which is infuriating to a lot of people, and it's just like, his name is Jungle Boy.
I don't mind that, but there's a billion of these things, and you know, it's just...
It's a clean sweep for Jim Ross, just for the record here, right?
Well, yeah, okay. The one thing I look at was his comment of burying the guys about the dives, and I know the dives are bad. But there's a professional way to handle it. There's a way of talking that helps. There's a reason why these guys love someone like a Jerry Lynn. Because everything you hear, it's, hey, how you doing? Talking, having fun. Hey, by the way, this, and this. I'd work on this and this. And hey, if we can tweak this in the matches, let's tweak this. Let's work together. JR just...
He's just a grumpy old man now. That's how he comes across.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
Yeah. I don't want him on the broadcast anymore because I think that's why Schiavone works.
You want to have your childhood memories and your fond memories of him.
Yeah.
And if he's on too much longer, it's going to start to bleed.
We wanted that with Lawler though, but Lawler came on and his jokes just didn't work anymore because it had passed his time. That when he said the Tozawa thing, it's like, no, you got to go. You're being super offensive, and there's just no room for this. And Michael Cole, you can say what you want. I, as a broadcaster, respect some of what Michael Cole does, but.
Remember Jim Cornette, I mean, on NWA, right? Same thing.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been okay at one point, but it's no longer one point. You can't say that anymore.
No, it's just passed them by.
It's really reading where everything is. It's reading the room. Yeah. Recognizing what's in front of you.
And I think Tony Khan clearly has difficulty making this decision.
Yeah.
Clearly.
He's a fan. He's a fan.
Yeah.
It's somebody he grew up with. I mean, it'd be like any of us, you know, in that position. I mean, I can't imagine being in charge of a company. And to me, like, he's a Marv Alberts. You know, he's a Bob Cole. He's in that status for me as an announcer of a legendary announcer. Like other than Gordon Solie, I don't know anyone else that's touched or Jim Ross.
It's like the Broncos needing to get rid of Elway, but they don't.
Yeah.
You know, because of the job he's doing, but because of the job from the past or memories and such, you know, it's really hard to do that, to cut ties with somebody when there's those other things besides his current job that you know kind of seem to weigh in on it. So it's a queen sleep. Let's move on to the next one.
That's it. We're done.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it. So I always do this at the end of the year.
Then I want to know who will be your breakout star for this next year.
Who will be my breakout star for this next year? I like Will Hobbs. That was going to be my pick, was Will Hobbs. I think I was going to pick Ben Carter if he would have signed an AEW, but he went to NXT UK, and I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, nothing happens when you go to NXT UK. I got Ricky Starks because he has Ricky all the Starks, potential and charisma.
So two Taz guys.
Yeah, two Team Taz guys, and both of them with a lot of potential. I think Starks is a really good talker. I think that's going to be his what puts him over the top.
I think
Joel.
And I'm still sticking with my Hangman pick. It's just that next. Sure. But
just be that stubborn.
I'm going to be that stubborn on this one. The thing that I think matters more so is all three of our picks are AEW guys. And I think my theory is because we've seen this company now go for a solid year. And we can all go and say, I have faith that they will do their damnedest to make this work. They're going to go out and they're going to try everything possible to find a way to make John Silver work, make Alex Reynolds work, Evil Uno, Stu Grayson, Butcher and the Blade, Lance Archer, Pac. They're going to give these guys, Miro, Kip Sabian, they're going to give these guys a chance at finding their footing. The Acclaimed, I'm trying to think, Top Flight, who I think Top Flight has a really bright future as a tag team. This is such a young roster. It's hard to just pick a few people because there's so many people that could suddenly have a breakout. Jungle Boy could break out next year for all we know. Orange Cassidy could take yet another step forward. Darby, MJF, all these guys could be that thing that takes another step forward. And the thing is, they're not working for what should be the biggest and best wrestling company in North America. They're working for the little guy, essentially. And they're working for a company that should have been in serious trouble at the end of this year, but they're not. It's because they've taken what they've been able to do with pro wrestling, learn from their mistakes, grow. They're not perfect, but they've been able to continuously grow and learn and find ways to tell a good long-term wrestling story. And to top it all off, the top of your company for the bulk of 2021 is going to be Kenny Omega. And you're seeing Kenny Omega start to really get into his groove. I really like the pairing of Don Callis. And if this belt collecting goes even a third of the way that they could go, and I think they can have a lot of fun. And I think the landscape professional wrestling could really shift in 2021. I think 2021 could be similar to 97, where I think we see a shift in things. And you go back to that Tony Khan tweet about the landscape of pro wrestling changing. I don't think it was Pac returning. I think Tony was more alluding to what could be transpiring moving forward. And I mean, you're seeing other wrestling companies open their doors for AEW. And I mean, the pandemic's going to hold it up, but I'd love to see Japan and the Forbidden Door.
Forbidden Door!
Because if there's one person to vanquish this evil, corrupt, crazy Kenny Omega, it's Kota Ibushi, his former golden lover.
I will get there. Any last things to add, Mo, before I add my last few things here?
No, I would say I think the key to getting that forbidden door open might be if they can forge a relationship with ROH first. ROH almost was my pick for worst company because of their handling Marty Scurll and just because they feel like they've given up. But if they got rid of Scurll and forge a relationship with AEW that they should have forged from the beginning instead of seeing them as competition, that was the wrong move. You know, that could open the door, and that's the way to go. For everybody, working together, including WWE, although that'll never happen, but everybody else working together, that's the key for the wrestling fan to make the most exciting, interesting product possible.
Yeah. Last few things here. Number one, we don't have moment of the year. And that to me, moment of the year was Becky. That was such a cool moment, and Asuka sold it, and it, you know, really made you smile, and it was very exciting. And I thought it was one of the few things that WWE did really, really well this year was Becky's announcement that she was pregnant. It was really, really cool. Yeah. Very excited. And Asuka, again, really sold it. And we don't do really rookie because it's hard. I think Dominic Mysterio had, I didn't know. I thought for what that kid had to do this year, he went above and beyond what he had any right to be in his first year. I don't think being on the main roster should be where he should be, but respect to that kid.
No, absolutely. That I thought, I remember first time I saw him, I went, oh, he's got no potential. He has tons of potential.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Moment of the year, by the way, if I was to say moment of the year here, I would just say it'd be tonight when it's, you know, Brody Jr. getting the belt. When you see that, it's incredibly touching.
So here's a quick things for 2021 predictions really quick here that I always ask you guys. And I always start with the big one. Will CM Punk wrestle in 2021? Joel?
I'm going to say yes, just for shits and giggles.
Morton?
Me too. I was going to do the exact same thing. I think if it's ever going to happen, it's 2021. Because if it doesn't, it's not going to happen in 2022.
Where? I say Japan.
I think WWE still.
Wow. Okay. Next up, will Stone Cold Steve Austin have a match, cinematic match, or whatever? Nope. Okay.
He's done.
Okay. Will The Rock wrestle this year?
Nope.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's wrestling.
I think him and Roman's going to happen.
I do too. Will Ronda Rousey wrestle this year?
Yes.
Yes.
I say yes.
She seems to be around. She seems to be hanging around.
Well, she was on the streaming thing yesterday. They did on the
up, down, YouTube. Down.
She was like the main part of it. Yep. Will AEW at any point this year, in 2021, will they hit 2 million views?
No.
No.
I say yes.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, look at the NBA following and everything that did to Jericho and really pissed him off, which I think that was some good comeuppance for Jericho for the dipshit that he's been this year. For the NBA fans, did you guys follow what was going on with that?
Yeah.
Not really, but.
So they had the follow-in from the Bucks-Celtics games, and I only follow this because, you know, covering the NBA, and I got a lot of feedback afterwards. A lot of NBA fans were making fun of Jericho for looking out of shape and looking fat.
Oh, that. Okay, yes, I know all about that.
And that really pissed off Jericho, and I thought that was pretty funny and a little bit of karma for what he has been as a human being this year. So just saying that. Yeah, and two last few fun ones here. Will Vince Russo be in the WWE at any point this year?
I'm not convinced he isn't already.
Yeah.
he's got to be selling them ideas.
Will Triple H be removed from NXT Creative?
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Doing a nice curveball there, eh?
Ooh. I think no.
No.
I think no.
I think that's
– But it's interesting because while I say I think no, I wouldn't be shocked by yes.
Yeah. I wonder if he will be.
I think that there's going to be a ton of pressure on them, and if they don't start really delivering, then NXT's dead in the water. Then it's just a Monday Night Raw, Friday Night SmackDown.
Also, last thing before I get to the last question, forgot about one shitty thing with WWE, firing Zelina Vega for using Twitch
and all that stuff. Oh, God, yes. Another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that whole Twitch, the whole Twitch thing. That's another one.
Yeah. I wanted to make sure we got that in.
They deserve their comeuppance, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the final one, who will be the biggest WWE or otherwise talent that jumps to AEW in the next year?
Adam Cole.
Yeah, Adam Cole.
Mine is Sami Zayn.
I could see it. Yeah.
Both those two are individual. The reason I don't know of Adam Cole is I don't know what his contract is as much. I've heard different things on his contract, and I know for sure that Sami Zayn is a free agent this year.
Yeah.
I think Bryan's.
Brian's another one as well. Yeah, but, I think we're gonna see. I think Aleister Black, Tommy End is another one we could see.
Yeah, I could absolutely see that happening. And boy, he would be so good.
So good.
It's funny, you know. I originally had thought to myself they need to get rid of Dark Order after this Brody Lee thing, and now I think they need to be a babyface. But if they were babyfaces and he came in and feuded with them as a heel. I think that could really work.
Yeah.
All right.
Go ahead, Joel.
I think pairing Hangman up with Dark Order and it being just down on their luck individuals that have banded together under Brody Lee and looking for a new leader, this man that's been struggling and helps them find their success and helps himself find, like, kind of like a sports movie where you got this ragtag group of people like the Mighty Ducks, where it's these island of misfit toys that are all paired together, and you take the guy that's struggling and down on his luck in Hangman. And I feel like this could be another layer to the Hangman story moving forward.
That's an interesting idea. I like that idea. because, you know, Emilio Estevez's character was down in his luck in that movie, and as were the team. Everybody is down in the luck, and they all rally around each other. I think that's actually a really good storyline.
And
I'd like to see them do that.
You can use the flying V versus the flying V trigger.
Yeah. And that was my last one. Will anyone kick out of the One-Winged Angel this year? And I think it's going to be Hangman.
No. There's only one man that will ever kick out of a One-Winged Angel.
And that's Ibushi?
Yeah.
Kenny's very. I think someone's going to do it this year.
I don't think anybody will this year, but I think Moxley could.
Yeah, I think someone's going to this year.
If it's going to be somebody, I think it'll be Moxley.
If I'm picking anyone, it's Hangman. It's in there.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Hangman personally, and we'll see. Hopefully, 2021 brings us a little bit more of a full year and brings us back wrestling crowds and whatnot, and more terrible gimmicks from the WWE side. Joel and Martin, thanks so much for following.
You're never getting the name right, are you? You've had everything but Martin this try. I mean, Joel is a little off, but you're just.
I'm trying my best.
I'm not giving you too hard a time.
It's repetition from having something for so long. We had a player a few years ago and say changed their name, and it took me forever because you're just so your muscle memory, right?
Eric Redbeard being called Eric Rowan by Jericho on commentary tonight twice.
There you go.
You know.
Yeah.
It's I get it.
So the nice thing is, everything's been tricky this year to stay on top because there have been different points where there hasn't been a lot of news. But this is actually our 199th episode, and the next episode, which will be released at some point in the beginning of the new year, will be our 200th episode with galores of interviews of every wrestling fan that has been on here, and even I get interviewed. So. We'll hit 200, and then we'll see what number we hit at the end of next year.
I hear that the person that interviewed you actually did a great job.
I think so. I don't want to give him too much credit. I hear his head is already too big as is. We need him to still fit through the door frame. So if his head gets any bigger, he's going to be stuck in one spot. So we don't want to inflate his ego too much.
All right. On that note, everyone, thanks so much for listening. Stay safe. Hopefully we'll be in a better place in 2021. But if Nostradamus is correct, then it's not going to be great because we have a comet coming, famine, and zombies. So we'll see if we have the first ever wrestling zombie match next year. Until then, cheers and enjoy the day, people.
Please. Come on. We already had the zombie in ECW.
Goodbye. And good night.